All right, it's time to move on. So, dear colleagues, I'm pleased to introduce our first keynote speaker, Saku Tuominen. Tuominen is an innovator, creative director, executive producer, author, keynote speaker, olive oil producer, and a right wing in ice hockey. He has been teaching creativity and innovation in more than 100 companies around the world. In his own words, his job is to create ideas and make them happen, as well as to help others to do the same. Tuominen has also written 11 books on subjects ranging from innovation, the future of office work, and good life, to human belief systems, everyday creativity, and Italian cuisine. His latest book, published in 2018, focuses on changing and future-proofing schools. Tuominen is also a co-founder of Broadcasters, one of the most successful Finnish TV production companies. During his 20 years in television, he has produced thousands of hours of programming and created almost 100 TV formats. In 2015, Tuominen founded 100, the mission of which is to bring together and share the best educational innovations from all over the world. 100's goal is to help improve education and inspire...
Enough! Sorry.
And to inspire a grassroots movement by encouraging pedagogically sound, ambitious innovations to spread across the world. So, without further ado, I give the floor to Saku.
Slightly embarrassing. I thought that it's always great to have a warm-up band performing before your own speech, but I thought that they were way too good. So I thought that it's embarrassing to come to stage after the performance, but luckily the introduction was way more embarrassing, so. And by the way, it's great I have a website because I'm doing small amount of keynote speeches and so forth. And I had an introduction, which means that I produce olive oil, I'm writing books, work with education, and then the last thing was, and I'm also a right wing. And then the negative feedback started to come, meaning is that I never thought that you are right wing and so on and so on, said in ice hockey. So I see myself as an idealist and so on. I don't have any opinions, right, left, whatever, you know, it's a free world. And so on. But it's great to be here. Like mentioned, I've been working all my life with creativity and innovation. I've been teaching innovation in the University of Helsinki. I've been helping more than 100 companies on improving the innovation processes, creativity, thinking skills, and so on. And for the past 5 years, I've been concentrating only on education. And I'm going to be speaking about the... my views on education in general, and I'm more than happy to answer your questions at the end and so on. But I'd say that I've been having a passion towards education all my life. My father was a teacher of history, and we've been doing different kind of pro bono things with Finnish schools for 10 years and so on. But traditionally, my background is outside of education, which has pros and cons. But let's get back to those in a minute. And the organization I'm running at the moment is 100, which is trying to identify great education innovations in various continents and so forth. But I'm going to be explaining about that in a minute as well. We are going to be covering huge amount of information in 50 minutes, but try to hold on and try to sort of like get some of the key messages I have. But let's start with the interactive part of the presentation. I have four questions, and you can either agree or disagree. There's no other, it's because we live in a black and white world, so it's either yes or no. So you either agree or disagree. There's no maybes. Understood? Okay, let's start with the first one. Schools need to change. Yes. Which one agree? Okay, I'd say maybe 70%. Next question. Schools are changing. Again, 70%. Schools are not changing fast enough. Schools are changing fast enough. Maybe 10% agrees that they are changing fast enough. And then let's have the last one. Schools should not change. No one. Because this is an interesting area. I've been discussing about kind of like changing schools. The headline I have is the global learning crisis and how to fix it. It's kind of like a totally perfect headline in the time of fake news. Fake news because it's dramatic and so on. Luckily, first of all, I question whether there is such a thing as learning crisis, and especially I question if I can fix it, and so on. But I'm kind of like, this is an interesting area because throughout my work or during my 5 years in education, I've been giving speeches, I've been discussing with education experts in over 30 countries. We've been giving speeches, we've been introducing our work in all continents. And quite often, also in Finland, quite often when you say the sentences that schools need to change, there's always people in the audience who says that, why? What do you mean by that? There is no, schools are changing and so on. Is that fine? Okay, there is no need to change. Then I say, are you happier with the sentences that schools don't need to change? But no, of course they need to change. But you just said is that they don't have to change. I have to think about my opinion regarding this one. So the interesting thing is that quite often when you are discussing, for example, with teachers, they take it as a blame. When you are saying that schools need to change, they say that I've done something wrong, which is not the case. The problem in here is that the world is changing extremely fast. And I think that maybe the better idea would be to use word improve, for example, than change. But whenever there's a discussion about schools need to change, I think that we always have to start with fundamentals. And the fundamental question for me is always, what is the purpose of education? And this is actually quite interesting. Whenever I go to a school in Finland, I've been visiting more than 100 schools in Finland, discussing with teachers, discussing with students, and I always ask one question. What is the purpose of education? And interestingly, quite a few teachers say that this is the first time in 10 years someone is asking the question. And I think that this should be kind of like the starting point whenever you are trying to change something. And there is no one right answer to this question. But if you ask from me, my answer is to help kids flourish in life no matter what happens. So the essence of education is not the years in school. The essence of education is the years after school. So when you say, for example, is that does this kind of education work? The problem is that you know it in 2030. You don't know it now. And that's one of the key problems. So if you want to be improving education, and if you agree is that the goal is to help every child flourish, no matter what is the background of them, what is the country they are in, what is the school they are in, to help them flourish in the future, then the key thing is that you have to understand how does the world look like in 2030 or 2040. And the problem in here is that no one knows. If someone tells you that this is how the world will look like in 2030, don't believe. It's all guesses. And I'll give one example. For example, AI. There's a lot of discussion about how AI will change the world. And I'm quite confident that it will change life. How? Haven't got the faintest idea, because no one has. And when we are discussing, for example, about, for example, the role of AI in education, I think that that's exactly the wrong question. We should start from the workplace, meaning is that what are the skills you need in life in 2030 because of AI, and then change education accordingly. So it's not about robotics. It's, for me, the key thing in here is not to understand robotics or 3D printing or whatever. The key is to understand what are the skills you need in life to flourish in 2030 and so forth. And for example, there's a lot of discussion that, for example, the occupation of lawyers will practically disappear in 10 to 15 years. Will it? No one knows. But there's an analysis from prominent houses who says that roughly about 70% of the lawyers will diminish during the following 15 years because the work is repetitious and it can be replaced by computers. What are the skills that will not be replaced? Empathy, creativity, trying to understand, being able to listen, and so on. And kind of like just to get you a really simple idea about AI, which is obvious for you. There was a study in India about AI trying to identify whether a patient has cancer or not. And there was a competition between 50 best doctors in India and computer. And which one was better? Computer by far. In 93% of the cases, computer was able to identify the cancer. In 74%, it was done by the doctors. So does this mean that there is no need for doctors in 2030? The answer is no. What is the role of the doctor? To tell to the patient that he or she has the cancer, and also to be there to identify, to have the dialogue, and so on. So we have to deeply understand these kind of things in order to improve the education. I was Googling yesterday, and I was writing, is that what are the technical megatrends, what are the digital megatrends affecting the future? And this was one of the pictures, and it's so complicated, is that there's absolutely no reason to start even trying to understand this one. So there will be massive changes, and some of the changes will be a lot bigger than we think. And some of them will be a lot smaller. Bad, unfortunately, we don't know which one are those. But I think that one thing is painfully obvious. You have to relearn whole of your life. Most likely, in 1940s, 50s, 60s, there were occupations where you sort of like easily got the basic information you need in life, in school, in university, and then you could stay in one occupation for 30 or 40 years. That kind of world doesn't exist anymore. Most likely, most of the people who are leaving school will have to learn a new skill, a new education, when they are 30, when they are 40, when they are 50. So what does this mean, if you ask from me? For me, the key skill school should give to each and every child is a passion for learning. So when they are leaving school, they should be excited about the skill of learning. Learning should be something which is extremely exciting, extremely beautiful. They are saying that, yeah, it's absolutely no problem that I have to learn new things in my life because I love learning. If they are leaving school thinking is that they hate learning, it's a complicated mindset in a fast-changing world. So whatever you do in school, make certain that each and every kid loves the act of learning. And if you ask from me, I'd say that that is not the case in school at the moment. So this is one thing. Like mentioned, we've been trying to identify education innovations from 150 countries, and we've been interviewing more than 100 education experts in Africa, in Asia, in Northern America, and so forth. And we've been asking one question. Do you think the way we educate our children fully prepares them for the 21st century? like mentioned, over 100 interviews. Can you guess how many of them have said yes? Out of 100 interviews, how many of them have said yes? No one. Not even one. So there is quite common consensus is that there is something broken in the education system. It doesn't mean that everything is broken, but it means that the world is changing so fast is that schools are having difficulties to cope. There's no one to blame, but this is a reality. And interestingly, in 100 we did a study. We were going through roughly about 100 research papers in all continents. The discussion we are having about the future of education, and we were interviewing students between 12 and 18 from 19 countries, and we were asking them a few questions, meaning is that, what do you want from school? What are the things you have a feeling is that school is not good enough? And these were students who are in school from 19 countries. 77% of them said is that they want to have a greater focus on skills that prepare them for their future career. So students in school have a feeling is that they are not extremely confident that all of the skills they are learning today are going to be useful, and they have a feeling that something is lacking. You might agree, you might disagree, but this is what the students are saying. Another example, 55% of them are saying that they want to learn how to live a sustainable lifestyle. So sustainable mindset is crucial for them. Then you are comparing this to the debate, and you're sort of like discussing about all the topics you are discussing today in the education debate globally, and the role of sustainability is 2.7%. So it's practically non-existent in the education debate, but kids are having a feeling is that we would love to understand this a bit more. So it's kind of like it's interesting to understand is that if the purpose of education is to help every child flourish, one key message I have is that I think we should be listening to kids, the students, a bit more. I've been visiting, like mentioned, more than 40 education conferences, seminars, events in all continents, and I'd say that what is the role of students in panels, in keynotes, in discussions, and so on? I'd say it's less than 5%, and that's optimistic. And quite often when they come and when they give a keynote or whatever, it's mind-blowing, it's beautiful, it's honest, and so on. So that's one of the key things I want to say. But let's sort of like start so that it's not going to be too negative. There's a quite often consensus, like I mentioned, is that learning is beautiful, learning is exciting. How come the sort of like the common impression about education is not exciting? People are not saying that schools are fantastic places, I love learning, and so on. And this is kind of like the quote from Albert Einstein, and I don't totally agree with him, I don't totally disagree with him. But what is the kind of like, what is the starting point? How did we end up here? So it's crucial to understand what is the history of the education system we are having at the moment. So the whole concept of school as we have it at the moment is actually quite new one. It's not an, we've been having different kind of ways to educate, learn things for thousands of years. But school itself was born in I'd say 1910, 1920. There was a organization in the US called Committee of Ten who was there, and there were a lot of debates on what kind of curriculum should you have, how many topics should you have in the curriculum, and so forth and so forth. And it was the time of industrialism or Taylorism. There's a guy called Frederick Winston Taylor who wrote the book, The principles of scientific management in 1910. And the basic ideas of them was that employees have a plan and the workers will implement the plan. People were almost like machines, and there was zero need for being individual. Actually, being individual was harmful. Today, when you are asking from employees, is that what is the most important skill employees have? It's exactly the opposite. It's creativity. It's being original. It's being individual, and so on. So this was the time, and this was Taylor's idea on how should a perfect workplace look like. And it's not a joke. That was the overall thinking about education. And this is the school. And then you can easily say that schools are changing a lot. And here's a classroom from a beautiful Danish school, and it is a mind-blowingly great school, and so on. But if you are comparing it, it's still the making change, because we've been having one kind of system for 100 years. It's really complicated to change everything overnight, because we have so much baggage. And I've been discussing with education innovators from various countries, and it's always so refreshing. I was discussing with one beautiful school, and I was asking, is that do you see a school without any kind of curriculum? Do you see it as something possible? And we've been having it for 10 years. It's beautiful. And then he started to explain how it works, and it was mind-blowingly beautiful. But the problem of that one is that it's difficult to manage, which means that it might be expensive, which might be that it contradicts with this kind of thinking, and so on. So you have to understand this one. So when you are saying is that schools are changing, it's true. For example, in Finland, we have beautiful, beautiful schools. But I think that it's really complicated to find a country where you don't have beautiful schools. You can pick any country in Africa, in Asia, in US, any state in US. There's a lot of examples of great schools. But the problem is that the world is changing faster. And when you are discussing with practically any expert about the speed of change, there's practically no one who says that the pace of change will slow down. It will accelerate. So the problem in here is that if we are not fixing this one, and if we have a feeling is that we are having slight problems in education at the moment, the problem is that the gap will be bigger in 2030. And that's the challenge we are facing in each and every school. And what is happening, for example, in India, I was discussing with one expert from India, and she said is that it's not a massive movement at the moment, but she said is that in the history, the worst students were dropping out of the school. What is happening now is actually that the best ones are doing the same, because they have a feeling is that they are getting more relevant education online. It's a small percentage, but it's interesting. And what if this kind of moment will start happening? Kids are leaving school and they say that I study myself because it's more exciting. It might happen in 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, unless we are doing something. India, there's other problems as well. There's 100 million kids graduating from the education system before 2020. And the current estimate is that 70% of them will be unemployed. And that's a problem as well. So what kind of... I was discussing with one education expert from India, and what she said to me is that what kind of education would diminish that figure to half? And it's a shocking question, difficult one. Anyway, mind the gap. If you are excited about the next generation, we have to mind the gap. We have to understand is that there has to be some kind of solution that we are helping the next generation in best possible way. We have to listen to them. We have to listen to the future workplaces. And I'm not saying is that the main purpose of education is to get an occupation. Because there are other values, like being civilized, being a good human being, understanding the life, holistic well-being, and so on. But if you take away that side of the education, then whose role is to help kids in those skills? So when we are thinking about making change happen, the first question always is why? And I think that for me, it's obvious. If the purpose of education is to help every child flourish, and if we are facing an uncertain future, we have to understand what kind of education helps kids in best possible way. And it is a really complicated discussion. Then the second question is, okay, what should we do? If we all understand the need, what is the solution? And this is a surprising part. Like mentioned, listening to debate in all continents, in all countries, actually no one disagrees. We all know what to do. And yet, every time I go, I've been hearing the same discussions, the same panels, the same keynotes over and over and over again. What are they? We need to have 4 C's. We need to have 6 C's. We need to have soft skills. We need to have 21st century skills, creativity, cooperation, curiosity, and so on. But this is a piece of news for you. No one disagrees. You might disagree, but I'd say 95% of the people don't disagree. So this is kind of like everyone agrees, is that, yeah, we have to do something. But then the problem is that, how do we do it? And I'm going to be getting back to that one. Because one question I'm having is that if we are willing, if we are feeling is that we have to be adding creativity, we have to be adding curiosity, we have to be adding cooperation, then my question is, agree, what are we taking away? And that's complicated because you have teacher unions, for example. They said, yeah, you can take everything, but you are not allowed to touch biology or geography or history or whatever, and so on. And then what happens is that we are adding up new things. And I'd say one of the key problems we are having with education in all continents is that the curriculum is mile wide and inch deep. There's huge amount of things and zero time to concentrate. And actually, I think that the same goes for education debate. It's mile wide and inch deep. If you are discussing about assessment, for example, or whatever area, it's really complicated because we should have so much more patience to understand how complicated the change is. If the key is to help kids to be flourishing in an uncertain life, what kind of assessment does help them to do so? If we live in a life where there are no right answers, why do we reward for them having the right answers? Really complicated. And what is now happening, for example, because there's AI and we need to have data, we need to have assessment. So what is now happening in many countries is that you're trying to find a way to assess creativity or empathy. I'm getting A from empathy. I'm getting A from creativity. I've been working with creativity all my life, and I'd say that it's a really complicated world. I would never, ever. So are you getting reward if you are questioning school? Because you should be questioning school, because it's having its own problems. But are we rewarding kids, meaning is that it's a brilliant student, he hates what we do? That's not the way, because we are rewarding obeying. And these are sort of like the key things which we have to understand. So I try to simplify it like this. This is that for me, what are the key things? You still should be having academic skills, the basics of those. But in addition to this one, you should have some kind of life skills. Because what are the key problems, for example, girls between 15 to 18 are having? They are mental problems. There's huge amount of burnout, depression, and so on happening already in high school. what is happening in countries which are performing beautifully in PISA, like Singapore, like some Asian countries, and so on, they are discussing that they are having a shadow education system, which means that when kids are leaving school in the afternoon, they are starting another school day, which is lasting 7 hours. So they are doing six days a week, roughly about 12 to 14 hours a day, and they are below 10. And they are having burnout of studying when they are 10. Is this the life we want to have? So we have to be sort of like open about this one. So when I'm saying, when we are discussing about global learning crisis, this is sort of like the debate we are having at the moment. So it's really complicated. For me, it's also kind of like quite simple, is that education, because we didn't have Google, we didn't know the information, it was crucial to know the basics. Now we know the Google, then the question is, how should we change the education? People are quite often, they are saying is that, yes, but you need to know the basics in order to be able to Google. Fully agree. But do we say is that the Google doesn't change the education in at any way? That makes absolutely no change. So we kind of like have to understand. But the end part in here, lightning of a fire, I think that's the key thing. We have to go for growth mindset. We have to go for passion for learning. We have to go for curiosity. And we have to have an education system that is excellent in this one. Because if we don't have, it's going to be complicated. And you know what? Because you are better education experts than myself, you know that how kids learn, they learn from example, right? So if you are not excited about the change, if you are not excited about the life yourself, it's harmful. So you should be excited about this change, because if you are not excited, then we've lost the game. So this is also one thing which I'm stressing to all teachers in Finland, is that if you are complaining about every change in school, every digitalization is a problem, new kind of assessment is a problem, new skills are a problem, then what do you think, what is the effect for kids? Are they excited about them? They are not. And these are complicated things again. But when you're saying, why should we change? I think we all agree. What should we do? We all agree. For me, the key question is how. That's the question we should be concentrating in each and every education conference there is. And this is the discussion that is lacking from each and every place. That's my gut feeling. I was in a one event where one beautiful, great expert, passionate expert from Norway was explaining how to change education, and great ideas, meaning trying to get rid of some parts of the curriculum, replace them with 21st century skills and so on and so on. And then I was supposed to comment. And I said, I love all of this. How do you make it happen in practice? I said, well, it's a really good question. I haven't been thinking about that one. But fine, great, understood. Because that's the question we should be thinking about. Because that's the only thing. It makes no sense that in 2025 we are discussing about the need to change education. What we should be discussing about is that how do you make it happen? And this is the key thing we are having in here, is that if you have a kid, for example, your own kid in school, and then you are trying to change the education way too fast, and you are messing up the whole system, then you say to this generation is that, sorry, your generation kind of like we missed the whole game or whatever, but it will improve in 30 or 40 years, so no problem. I think that this is something which we should not be saying. So then the question in here is that how do we make change that is big enough, relevant enough, fast enough, without messing up the whole system? And that's the most difficult question in life. I think that this is extremely complicated to make happen. If you are comparing it with real-life problems, like in Africa, there's a need in parts of Africa below Sahara southern parts of Africa need for new teachers, and the amount they need teachers is 30 million. They need to have 30 million teachers within the following 10 years. And no one knows where do they come from. So we can be flying education innovations from here to Africa, but we have to take into the consideration is that, by the way, they don't have teachers. So we have to understand all of these complicated areas in here. So what is the solution in here? Do you agree is that we need to have new ideas? There's only one problem with new ideas. Most of them don't work. That's the problem. If you go through startups, 90% of the startups go to bankruptcy. If you are trying new things in schools, most of them don't work. And the problem in here is that in order to make the change, you have to try new things, but then in order to get the feelings that do they work or don't work, you have to try them for 3 or 4 or 5 years. So you try something, and then after 5 years, oh shit, this was the wrong direction. And this is no laughing matter. This is exactly how it works. So what is the solution? The only solution I have myself are innovations. Only if you have better ideas or whatever, I'm more than happy to listen. But the only solution that I think that is big enough, fast enough, doable, and so on, it's innovations. Because what is the difference between idea and innovation? Innovation is an idea that works. That's the main difference. So, for example, in Finland, we are investing huge amount of money to what we call kokeilukulttuuri, which is sort of like an experimental culture. Beautiful, I love it, because innovations come from experiments. But the problem is that the education system changes through innovations. So we should have both, and we are not extremely good in making innovation spread. So if you go through a traditional innovation theory, innovation solves a problem, it has been tested, it works, and it can work in various places. Innovation is not the same as for profit. Innovation is not the same as digital. Innovation is a tested solution to a real problem that can work in various places. And that's exactly what we need in education. Whether we are discussing about language education or assessment or leadership or fighting against bullying or whatever. And when talking about innovations, I think that we need to have education innovations in every area of education. We need to have new ways to teach languages, new ways to teach mathematics or whatever. We also need to have innovations on how to unburden teachers, how to re-educate teachers, how to take good care of our teachers, because if teachers are not feeling well, then the whole system collapses, if you ask me. And we quite often, we make the change kind of like fast enough, but we forget to take good care of the teachers, and it will not work. Then we need to have new innovations in assessment. We need to come up with new ideas on how to assess kids. Totally new kind of approaches. We need to have new kind of innovations regarding learning environment. And for me, one of the most important is we need to have leadership innovations. How to make teachers excited, how to make change happen, and so on. And there's a massive, massive, massive shortage of leadership innovations in every country of the world. How to make principals excited, how to make them understand, how to make teachers excited, how to communicate with parents, and so on. Brookings was doing a massive study about obstacles in making education change happen, and one of the biggest obstacles was parents. Because if you are trying to change school, they complain because they had a different kind of school. So they are comparing the existing education to their own education, and the one thing they forget is that, by the way, the world changed. And this is, again, something which you have to understand. And there is a saying which you probably all of you know, is that whatever happens in Las Vegas stays in Las Vegas. And I think that that's also true for education, but you have to replace the word Las Vegas with the word classroom, meaning that whatever happens in classroom stays in classroom. Because oddly enough, teachers in Sweden don't really know what is happening in the classrooms of Finland. But teachers in Jyväskylä don't really know what is happening in Helsinki. And I've been visiting these education seminars, and I ask from US teachers, for example, which one of you would like to know what is happening in Finnish classrooms? All of them say, yes, I'd love to. Then I'm asking, can you mention one education innovation that is happening today in Finnish schools? Not about the education system, innovation that is happening in classroom. Practically no one can. And it's interesting. Can you think, for example, a composer who doesn't know anything that is happening in other countries, has never heard of a symphony or song that's been composed in another country, or scientist, or author, or journalist? Totally unthinkable, isn't it? Then you discuss with teachers and asking, do you know what is happening in South Korea? Do you know what is happening in Singapore? Practically no one knows. If you know, beautiful, you are an exception. But practically no one knows. And it's really, really interesting, the world. So I'd say that this is sort of like the situation in practically each and every education system globally. It's all happening in silos. So we live in an extremely global world. And when you are asking from employees, what are the key skills that you need to have in a workplace in 2030? One of the key things is you will need to have a global mindset. You need to be able to operate with different cultures. Then I'm asking, can you imagine a more unglobal, anti-global world than education? And it's complicated. Because that's not the way the education system was built. And I think that we need to change this. So extremely briefly, you don't have to think, but sort of like three international assessment innovations that you are really excited about. That you're sort of like saying is that if we only could get this innovation to my country. So you're not allowed to be discussing about your own innovations in your own country. How many of you can easily mention three assessment innovations coming from other continent than where you are at yourself? No one. And you are education experts. Isn't it amazing? If I would be having my own child as I'm having in high school, I would be slightly worried. But don't be too ashamed, because you are not an exception. This is how education works. And I'll briefly explain what we are trying to do in 100, and then I'll give you a few examples of what we have been learning when we've been doing our work.
The purpose of school is often debated, but it's difficult to argue that a key purpose of schools is to help every child flourish in life, no matter what happens. And when the world changes, schools have to adapt to keep up. Selection process, all of the innovations are packaged and shared with the world for free. Our goal is to connect amazing global forerunners in education, from teachers to principals to policymakers, and be the world's leading expert in the field of education innovation. All for free.
So this is what we are doing. We are a non-profit organization from Finland, and we try to make each and every education expert excited about the world of education. We don't complain. We are excited because there's beautiful things happening in every country of the world. The bad news is that you don't know about these things at all. So that's kind of like the key thing. We are trying to put a spotlight to beautiful teachers, to great schools, to great education startups, to great non-profits, and celebrate the work they are doing. We have been going through roughly about 1,700 innovations from 160 countries, and the quality is amazing. There's beautiful things happening all over the world. We have, at the moment, we are having roughly about 40% coming from Europe, and Africa, North America, Asia, and so on. But we try to be as global as possible. Like mentioned, we have three criteria. First one is impact, meaning that we are only selecting innovations that have been in practice for at least 1 year. The evidence-based is different in every country or whatever, but we have to have some kind of evidence that this is working. It doesn't mean that it will work in every country. It means that it might work. And the percentage that it might work or the probability is higher because it's been tested, it's working. It has to bring something new and it has to be scalable. But we also have values, meaning is that, for example, we are not for standardized testing. If you want to be strictly, kind of like fiercely increasing the amount of standardized testing, it's not for us because we don't believe in that kind of testing. We believe every innovation we are selecting, we have a feeling that they have to help every child flourish in life. That's the key thing in here. In addition, so we are selecting 100 innovations annually, and the next selection will be released in November in Helsinki. We are also having spotlights, and spotlight is a collection of 10 innovations either on a region or on a theme. We have spotlight up and running in Australia, in the state of Victoria. We are starting new one in Taiwan. We are starting new one in Pittsburgh. We are doing three in a row, three-year plan in Chile, and we are negotiating with various countries. We are also having spotlight on sustainability, where we try to identify great education innovations that are improving kids to understand what is the role of sustainability, how should you teach sustainability, how should you improve your school to increase the amount of sustainability in your school and so on. We've been going through 65 innovations, again from all continents, and we are having a summit in Los Angeles in the beginning of November. And we are making videos out of each and every one of these innovations, and you can watch the videos for free. You can connect, there's contact information, there's packages, there's videos, there's reports for all of you, for all education experts, and you can use them for free. We have 100 open where anybody can be releasing their own innovation, and we are promoting them. We have more than 1,000 innovations already in our database. We are having 100 ambassadors from 67 countries who are promoting, who are excited about educations that are happening in other countries. We are having 100 Innovation Summit next time in Helsinki in the beginning of November, where all the best education innovators come to Helsinki and they are sharing notes. They are discussing about how to improve assessment, how to improve mathematics, and so on. So it's not for startups only. It's not for ministers. It's for people who are in the front line trying to make great things happen. It's early days still. We've been having more than 200,000 people going through the material, and the number is growing all the time. We have almost 50,000 visitors a month who are going through. We've been able to multiply the amount of users of the best innovations and so on. So we are trying to make great things happen. And I'll give you a few examples. You can go to the website 100.org if you want. But there's one example, for example, which I'm not sort of like this complicated. There's big innovations, small innovations, complicated, not so complicated and so on. But I'll give you one extremely simple example. There's many teachers when we are discussing is that it would be great to be teaching empathy. It would be great to be helping kids to understand that there's people who have so different backgrounds in life. How could you teach those and so on? So there's a one project from US, Global Oneness, and it's non-profit. All the material they are offering is for free. And what they are doing is that they are releasing documentaries meant for schools together with learning plans, education plans, and they are coming out every week. Really simple one. And we package that and we are promoting them. And I'll show you a short clip of that one.
Stories tell us who we are. They allow us to question the world around us and understand our lives, creating an opportunity to have global conversations while learning about the universal values that connect us all. The Global Ones Project brings the world to your classroom with free award-winning films, photo essays, articles, companion lesson plans, and educational resources. Our timely, character-driven stories explore cultural, social, and environmental issues, sparking meaningful conversations in the classroom.
I love World Peace.
Available in both English and Spanish, our high school and college-level lesson plans contain engaging exercises, including collaborative discussion questions and reflective writing prompts. Aligned to national standards, our lesson plans can also be adopted for elementary and middle school use. Using our stories as evidence, students consider compelling questions and themes, challenging and strengthening their relationship to themselves and the world.
Yes, I'm living in an area where, you know, I'm prone to hurricanes. But nowadays, who's not prone to hurricanes?
The X sound.
Oh, that's the hardest one for everybody.
I'm uncertain about my language.
It seems weird that I am the last one.
Freedom before I came here was just another word. I'd never been to prison before.
Really simple one. Which one of you, and some people are using also this for language training, so you're combining empathy and language training. So question, which one of you would see something like this useful in your own country? Maybe 60%. Some of you don't, some of you. Which one of you had heard about this before? One. And this is exactly the same in every country, and I don't mean that you should use. I mean that there's a lot of great things out there. And isn't it kind of like terrifying idea is that there's dozens of innovations that you would love that would work in your own school or what that you have not heard of. And that's the world we are living. Extremely briefly, for example, discussing about assessment. Mew School in Los Angeles have been innovating on assessment for more than 10 years, really ambitious school, and they are assessing kids so that academic skills, how well you can manage or perform in academic skills is only 20% of the final mark. Then it's how do you treat other people? That's as important as the academic skills. Then how well do you take care of the world sustainability? Then how well are you able to operate from your ideas to an action? And all of these come together to a really ambitious new way to assess. And when discussing with the best Finnish experts of assessment, and when they go through the work that they are doing, they go like, wow, this is one of the coolest things I've ever seen. It's not replicable in Finland as it is, but it's really useful to know the work they are doing. And I think that we should be multiplying this kind of dialogue, and we have to do it first. And that there's a lot of examples in here, but I'm kind of like not going through into details now. I'll finish with few simple insights about what we've learned in scaling education innovations. First of all, it's not easy. It's really complicated area. But then again, it's not hopeless at all. Because scaling innovations is complicated in every industry of the world. There's one of my big heroes, Everett M. Rogers, who and his life work was on diffusion of innovations, meaning how to make innovations spread. And this was his work. Most of you might have seen it. So there's innovators, there's early adapters who say that, great, let me use the best education innovations. And there are people who say that you could never, ever use education innovations because education is so different. And none of those are kind of like 100% correct, because education is complicated, but there's huge amount of possibilities to do it. And I think that in 2030, it feels almost ridiculous that in 2018, it was not every day in education. Because, like mentioned, people say that, yeah, but education innovation, they don't travel because every country is so different. Redes de Tutoria, a beautiful way to help social exclusion, invented in Mexico. They started in one school in Mexico, then they were in 4,800 schools in Mexico, and then they wanted to test it abroad, and now they are in 12 countries, and it works in each and every country. Design for Change, which some of you might know, which is extremely well known, created in India, beautiful way to teach kids growth mindset, taking care of the environment and so on, now in 67 countries, and it works in every country. Maybe it doesn't work in your country, but it works in 67 countries. Global Oneness, classrooms in over 100 countries have been using it, and it works. It might not work in your classroom, but when you say that yes, but education innovations don't work in other countries, it's not true. You have to understand this one, because the change is already happening. So in less than 10 minutes, 10 insights. First of all, there's beautiful innovations happening in every country. There's no shortage of education innovations. We have in our catalog already 1,700 innovations, and all of those are great. They don't mean that they could work in every country of the world, but they are beautiful things. They can come from everywhere. And this is an interesting, which I kind of like hate to say coming from Finland. The fact that you are having the best education system does not mean that you have best education innovations. And other way around, the fact that your education system is broken doesn't mean that you are not having great education innovations. US, full of beautiful things, the whole system is a mess. Sorry if there are people from US and so on, but it's not working as well as it should. I think that this is fair to say. But if you go to a beautiful school or whatever, the stuff they are doing is amazing, and I think that a lot of that could be extremely useful in Finland, for example. Another thing, in Finland we quite easily have this quite old-fashioned view, is that we should be importing our know-how to Africa. And yes, maybe, but then again, our main know-how is in excellence and equity, it's in systematic level, which is really complicated to export. But I think that we should be extremely curious and excited about the innovations that are happening in Africa today and take those to Finland, because the innovations that are happening in African schools are extremely good. So identifying innovations is easy. Scaling how is the most difficult part. And one of the problems in here is that traditionally in every industry, innovation spread bottom-up, but education is top-down system, and it's happening in silos. In Finland, teachers have quite a lot of trust and freedom. That's not the case in most of the countries. There's always some gatekeeper who know what works in this country and what doesn't. So when we are having dialogue with teachers, teachers are excited and say, they say that, I would love to start using this innovation tomorrow. Then we go to a gatekeeper and they say, yes, but our teachers are not excited about this. They are, we were just having dialogue today. So this is something which you have to understand as well. The word innovation has really bad reputation among teachers, because they are messing up the idea and innovation. They have a feeling is that, don't bring me innovations, I hate them. And then I asked, okay, what do you want to have? I want to have something which is solving a real problem that is working and that could work in my classroom as well. That's the definition of innovation. But it has a serious image problem. And this is crucial because unless teachers love them, they will not spread. If you're at the top level, if you say that you have to be using this and teachers hate it, it will die in 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. So you have to respect, and the best innovations actually make the life of the teacher easier, not more difficult. And this is crucial as well. So if you want to make an innovation spread from country to country, it has to be successful in one country. And when I'm saying successful, I don't mean money. I mean evidence and so on. There has to be a feeling is that this is working brilliantly in here, and there's a lot of evidence, and then it has a potential to possibly work in some other countries as well. But even then, it's complicated. Video helps. But in addition to this one, I think that there needs to be organization who is helping, and that's the plan that we want to be doing as well. I'm getting back to that one in a minute. But then spreading innovations takes resources. It doesn't happen magically. In education, there's sort of like thinking is that you have an innovation and boom, it starts to spread virally, kind of like viral spreading. In most of the cases, that's not the way it works. You have to be promoting, you have to be explaining, you have to be implementing, you have to be modifying, and so on. And the problem in here is that some of the best innovations don't have the resources. There's a lot of startups who have massive resources, but the content is bad. And some of the great ones have fantastic content, but really small amount of resources. And interestingly, there's a saying, for example, is that there is no such thing as edtech, because if you really have ed, you don't really understand tech. If you have tech, you don't really understand ed, and so on. And I don't totally disagree with this one, because quite often the best education startup, they might be great in the technical side or whatever, but the pedagogical side is weak. All the ones which are really strong on pedagogical side might be weaker on the platform, and so on. So to wrap this up, what we are also planning to do is that we are planning to set up a new organization, which is 100+, which will be a social enterprise. And the goal of that one would be is that, for example, if your city says that we have a problem, we want to identify the best innovations which are improving the teaching of languages or fighting against bullying or whatever, our goal is that we help not only to identify them, but also to implement them. And that's a massive, massive plan. But I think that without that kind of part, the change will never, ever happen. So the essence in here is that let's concentrate on the things that work and let's accelerate the work as the spreading of those. And let's understand is that the change is not something, for example, digitalization is not something that happens, meaning is that you go through digitalization and then you are digitalized. Because change is constant. You have to be improving from today for the following 100, 150, 200 years. And you have to love the change, because if you don't love, you are not excited. And the essence, no matter what you do, should always be the child. Always. So no matter what kind of change you do, you should always consider, does this innovation, does this change help child flourish in 2030, 2040? If the answer is no, then it's a bad innovation. This is what I wanted to say to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Saku. I think this gives us a lot to think about during the week and during the coffee break and to discuss with colleagues. As a thank you, I would like to give you this
perfect
gift. And once more, and once more say thank you for sharing your ideas.
Thank you so much.
And next we have a coffee break in the lobby and then the parallel sessions.